Going on now, let's talk about creative selling. How do we sell creatively? Well, in creative selling, we have to understand that creativity is a natural characteristic of all top salespeople, and that creativity is a matter of self-concept. Every single one of us is highly creative. Every single one of us, when we are trying to avoid a traffic jam to get from one part of the city to another, and we're taking side roads and side streets and alleys and so on, we are engaging in highly creative acts. Every single one of us, when we are trying to arrange a party or put together a sales presentation or to convince somebody of something that we want them to do, is engaging in a highly creative act. When we get dressed in the morning and we match clothing and ties and shirts and blouses and dresses and shoes and so on, is an act of creativity. Many of us, however, think that we're not particularly creative. And to the degree to which we believe that we're not particularly creative, we won't be. To the degree to which we believe we are, we will continually come up with creative solutions. And there's several areas where creativity is necessary. We know also that creativity is stimulated by focused questions, by pressing problems, and by burningly desired goals. The more intensely we desire to accomplish something, the more creative we are in its accomplishment. The more focused and specific the question, the more creative we are in answering it. And the more intensely desired or the more pressing the problems, the more creative we are in resolving them. So here's several areas of creativity which grow with use and exercise. Number one is to find new and better prospects. Very, very important area of creativity, which we'll come to in a second. To uncover buying motives. You have to be very creative in finding out what will cause the person to buy. Because many people have inbred buying resistance, which means they don't want to tell you why it is that they might buy your product. Because they know from experience that if you find out what they really want to enjoy, and you keep repeating that argument over and over again, they will be too weak to resist it. Isn't that true? To overcome buyer resistance or indecision. Overcome this, I want to think about it, or let me talk it over with my boss, or call me back next week. This requires tremendous acts of creativity. To discover new product uses and applications. To discover new ways that you can use old products. And to create sales where none exist. And this is so important because every single sales act is an act of pure creativity. What you are doing is you are putting together a business transaction, which is, if you like, the backbone of our society, where nothing existed before. You are literally creating it with your own mind in conjunction with your product and the customer. And that's why developed creativity is very, very important. And I'll give you some methods to develop in a second. So remember, creative selling begins with thorough knowledge of your product or service. The better you know your product or service, the more thoroughly you master the detail of it, the more creative you are in selling it. The fastest way to increase your income is how? To spend more time with better prospects. So creative prospecting is important, and this requires analysis and planning. Basic analysis begins with three questions, and I'd like you to answer these three questions. What are the 5 to 10 most attractive features of your product? List them in order of importance. Why should somebody buy your product? What is it about your product that makes it worthwhile that somebody should buy it? So you need to know the answers to these before you can prepare a sales presentation. So the next question is, what needs of your prospective customer do these product features satisfy? What benefit does it offer? In other words, what's in it for the customer to purchase your product? And write these down opposite the 5 to 10 points that you put down. Remember, every one of your customers is looking for benefits. They're not looking for features. The features are simply a means to an end. So then we go and we say, all right, let us say that you have successfully conveyed the features in question one and the benefits in question two, and the person is now very interested in enjoying the benefits that you have described in your product or service. Then the next question is, why should they buy it from your company? List 5 to 10 reasons why the person should buy it from you. Now they're convinced that they want it. Why should they buy it from you? What does your company offer that other companies don't offer? Now, going on to strategic selling, and these questions are the most important questions that you will ever ask and answer in moving to high levels of income in selling. In strategic selling, you begin by identifying your best possible customer market and then concentrating on it single-mindedly. Again, we said this earlier, one of the biggest mistakes that salespeople make is they look upon everybody as being a prospect of equal value, when in some cases, one prospect may be worth 100 times the value of another prospect. The basic rule in selling is always fish for whales, not minnows. Remember, if you catch 1,000 minnows, what have you got? A bucketful? But if you catch one whale, you've got a whole ship full. And it's very important that we carefully identify where our biggest breakthrough opportunities are. And this comes from asking these questions. Who exactly is your customer? Who buys your product or service right now? The next question is, who might be buying it in the future? Remember, you're going to live the rest of your life in the future. And all of your income is going to come from who you sell to in the future as opposed to who's bought it in the past. So who might be buying it in the future? What direction is your market going in? Who bought it in the past? What is the continuity between past and future? Where are there markets opening up or likely to open up for your product or service? The next question is, why does your customer buy? What benefits or advantages does he perceive in purchasing your product or service? Now, who or what is your competitor? Who is your major competitor? Or what is your major competitor? In some cases, our major competitor is the ignorance of the market. People do not know that your product is available, or they do not know that the product is available of the quality and price that you have to offer. That may be your major competitor. That may be your major obstacle to selling. But then again, it may be another competitor. It may be that people are buying something else to replace your product, or there's somebody else selling exactly your same product and they're buying that. Who is your competitor? All decisions with regard to sales and marketing have to be made in consideration of what you're competing against. Selling, in some respects, is similar to warfare. Decisions in warfare are always made in consideration of what the enemy is doing. And considerations in selling are always taken in consideration of what your competitors or your competition is doing. Now, this is the key question, and it's, what is your competitive advantage? Where do you have an advantage over your competitors? What is your area of excellence in your product or service? What is your unique selling feature? What do you have to offer that nobody else has to offer? Because this is invariably the key reason why people will buy your product over a competitor's, and this is the key to developing an effective sales presentation. You must know clearly and unequivocally so that somebody could wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and shake you and say, why is your product better than anybody else's? And you could say, it's better because of this. And you could say instantly, you know exactly the reason where your product stands out above all other products. It does something that other products don't do. Or you offer something that other products or other services other companies don't offer. But what is it that is unique and special about your product or service? Nobody is going to buy your product just because it's as good as anybody else's. They will always buy your product because there is something unique about it that makes it better in their eyes and for their purposes and for their needs than any other product in the market. And your key job is to identify that unique selling feature, that competitive advantage that sets you head and shoulders above anybody else, and build your sales presentation around that. Let me give you an example. I had a young man come up to me who sells electrical supplies not long ago. And he was one of 10 companies that sold electrical supplies. And they all bought their supplies from the same suppliers. They all sold them at the same prices, and they all sold them to the same customers, and they were selling in a depressed market. He said, how can I develop a unique selling feature or a competitive advantage? And I said, I don't think it's possible. Based on what he had told me, what he was selling was something that anybody could buy anywhere else at the same price and the same quality and the same terms, and there was no unique selling feature. I said that in a situation like that, if you don't have the exclusive right to a particular market or a particular product or a particular service, then you will never be able to achieve high levels of success because your customers can always get the same thing from a variety of other places identically. So what you have to do is think very seriously of selling something that has something special or unique about it, and especially something special or unique that you can get excited about, something special or unique that you really consider to be important and that you can become enthusiastic about in telling customers about it. An example of a unique selling feature is IBM. IBM has a slogan throughout the company at every level throughout the world, and it is IBM means service, which means that when we think about IBM, we think about a product that will be properly serviced no matter what goes wrong with it, don't we? And we know that customers will pay a premium for IBM products because one of their greatest needs, the benefits that they seek, is that once they've bought the product, they want to be sure that it's going to continue running, that they're not going to be stuck with a lemon. And IBM stands four square, $1 billion a year behind service. So we'll pay 50% more, even 100% more, for an IBM product that will do the same job because of that particular unique benefit. For example, in Southern California, another example of a unique benefit, back in the early 50s, they were trying to introduce Smirnoff vodka. And they had a terrible time. It was selling number 19 amongst distilled liquors in the United States. And they changed advertising agencies two or three times, and they still could not get people to try vodka because most people in the U.S. and Canada considered vodka to be a foreign drink, an alien drink, if you like, a Russian drink. So they tried and they tried and they tried. Finally, after about the sixth advertising agency, one of the copywriters sat down and studied vodka and studied the qualities or characteristics of the drink to try to determine what about it was unique, what was different from other distilled liquors. And he found it very soon, it was, that you could drink vodka and people would not be able to smell it on your breath. So he came up with an advertising line. Actually, he came up with two. The first one was Smirnoff Vodka, dot, 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 it leaves you breathless. And the second one was Smirnoff Vodka, dot, 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 it takes your breath away. Smirnoff Vodka went from less than $19 million of sales in 1954 to over $100 million of sales in 1956 and is over $1 billion in sales now. And there are over 50 companies selling vodka on the tails, if you like, of Smirnoff Vodka because it's been one of the most successful distilled liquors. It's the second or third best-selling distilled liquor in the world today because everybody knows that if you want to drink at lunchtime or if you want to drink before you go home and you don't want anybody to know, if you want them just to think that you're just plain stupid, instead of drunk, you can have a couple of drinks of vodka and nobody's going to know. They found the unique selling feature, and every product, I believe, if it has the ability, has that unique selling feature that if you can find it, you can so dramatically increase the amount of it that you can sell as to be beyond all belief. And this is where the focus of your creativity must be. Why do your customers buy from your competitors? How could you offset this? What benefits do your customers perceive in buying from your competitors? Why do they select your competitors' products over yours? And how can you offset this? What can you do to undermine that benefit or to make your benefits appear to be greater or more important than what your competitors can offer? So here's some of the other questions which I suggest you review in your own time. Who are your non-customers? The people who buy neither from you or from your competition. The ones who are not even in the market at all. Let me give you an example. The biggest non-customer in our society is the person who does not vote. The non-voter, if he could be or she could be induced to the polls in any given election, would determine every single election in our country. But the 35 or 40% of people who never vote themselves are the greatest single voting bloc in the country. The people who are not buying your product or anybody else's product are the greatest single source of new customers if you can find out why it is that they're not buying anything. Why is it that they're not using it? People never thought of buying computers up until a few years ago, and then they came out with computer games. And suddenly everybody went crazy about computer games, and for the first time, people thought of buying small computers and taking them home. In other words, they found a way to sell to the non-customer. Why are they non-customers? Why don't they buy? And then ask yourself this question with regard to your customers and to non-customers. When do they buy? When is the best time to sell to your customers? Is it a certain time in the business cycle? Do they buy when business is growing? Do they buy when business is declining? Some services are most appropriately sold when businesses are in difficulty. Some are most appropriately sold when businesses are growing rapidly. So if that's the case, don't try to sell to a business that is in the wrong time of the business cycle. What season of the year do they buy? Do you notice that most ski shops shut down in the summertime? They're not crazy enough to stay there all summer and try to sell to people in the summertime, and they open up again in the winter. What stage of the product life cycle? This is very important. Many customers will buy a product as soon as it comes into the market. Some customers will wait for a while and then buy the product after that. As a matter of fact, there's a scale, and it's like this. It's the impulse buyer. When the product first comes into the market, a few people will buy it immediately. 5 to 10% of people are plungers. They'll try it out whether it's good or not. After the plungers comes the second phase of the market. This is the most profitable phase of all. Many companies that introduce new products don't realize that it's a tough slog getting the product into the market for the first year or 2 years. Then suddenly, everybody decides to come in because they see the product, they see that it works, they see that it's not being withdrawn, and a whole lot of people come in, and this is the greatest sales period and the greatest profit period. Then you have the period of maturity, where the latter stage of buyers come into the market, and they come in, now that everybody's got one, they decide that it's safe to come in, and they buy a few, but by this time the competition has come into the market, the margins are much narrower, the profits are much slower, the sales are much more competitive, and finally you have what is called your post-mature buyer. Your post-mature buyer is the one who bought the Edsel 2 years after it was discontinued. They don't buy a product or service until it's getting old. They are so careful about buying. This is what you might call your apathetic buyers. We'll talk about a little bit later. They won't buy anything until it's been around for so long that there's not a question in their mind that it's safe to buy it. So you have to ask yourself, what period of the product life cycle does your buyer buy? If your buyer's a plunger, he may buy it early. If he's one who's pretty progressive and forward-looking, he'll buy it after it's become established. He may not buy anything until it's been out for a couple of years, and he may be a post-mature buyer. That's a very important thing, and you can find this out by asking them when they bought other products that they have. When they came into the market, how long have they been doing what they've been doing? They'll tell you. And another thing is, do they buy it when others have recommended the product? Many people will not buy anything until they have a recommendation from somebody they respect. That's why the value of testimonial letters is so high. If you can go to a company in your industry that buys your product and get a letter from the person who has purchased the product and take it to somebody else in the same industry and say, look, the president of ABC Company, which sells similar products, has bought one, and here's a letter from him saying how happy he was or how happy she was. By the way, with regard to testimonial letters, the easiest way to get testimonial letters is, first of all, to ask for them and say, would you write me a letter telling me how happy you are? And the second way is to write the letter for the person and ask them if they would type it up on their letterhead and sign it. And you'll be surprised. If your customers are happy and you've taken good care of them, they will take your letter. They may make a couple of corrections in it. They'll have it typed up right there while you wait on their letterhead, and they'll sign it. And you can carry it around in a plastic page. And that plastic page testimonial is worth an hour of you trying to tell the customer yourself how good the product is. A testimony, if the person is interested, he can call because there's the telephone number right there on the plastic page. So I very strongly suggest that you do this. If you have happy customers, go back to the happy customers, write a nice letter saying, when we were first approached by your company, we were a little bit hesitant about buying the product or service, but we decided to go ahead because we were very impressed with the presentation, and we tried it out, and this is what has happened to us, and we are certainly happy we made the buying decision because these are the results that we've gotten. That kind of a letter is worth its weight in gold, and if you've got half a dozen letters like that, you can double or triple your sales just on referrals, because many people will not buy until they have read a testimonial from somebody that they respect. We've talked about this before. What causes us to go to a new restaurant? It's word of mouth advertising, isn't it? We don't look in the newspapers and say, well, there's an advertisement for a restaurant, let's go and try it out. We wait till we hear somebody else tell us, hey, that's a good restaurant, you should give it a try. That's when we go to the restaurant, isn't it? So if that's when people buy, then be very alert to that. And don't be reluctant to ask your customers or prospects for the answers. Go and sit down with them and ask these questions. Say, look, we're doing some market research, and we're talking to some of our most esteemed customers to find out how we can serve them better in the future. Would you answer a few questions for me? Your customers will tell you how to sell additional customers. The people who've bought from you are your very best source of valuable, if not priceless, information to sell to additional people. And most salespeople in their whole careers never think to ask. They sit at home and guess. They hope that what they have is the right answer, and often your customers will tell you, well, I bought it because of this, and you'll say, geez. And you know how often we miss it? They'll say, geez, did you buy it because of that? We'll say, I'll be darned. And you've been selling it on the basis of something else all along. Very, very important. Now, finally, with regard to creative selling, the creative method, and this method was developed by Earl Nightingale some years ago, and more salespeople have earned their way to high earnings in their professions with this method than any other method that I've ever seen. It's called the 20 idea method. If you will use this method every day for the next month and apply some of the ideas that you generate, you will double your income within the next 90 or 180 days. If you do not double your income by reading 30 minutes every morning and using this method on a regular basis, then it's not possible for you to double your income in this lifetime. How's that for a sweeping statement? What you do is you take your key problem, your most pressing goal, your most pressing question, and you write it first thing in the morning at the top of a piece of paper in the form of a question. For instance, here's some examples. How can I double my sales in 1985? Or how can I increase my ratio of closes to calls? In other words, how can I close more of the people that I call on? And there's a series of answers to that. How can I increase my sales effectiveness today? Or here's another one. How can I utilize my time better today? Or how can I structure my time so that I see more prospects every single day? You write it at the top in the form of a question. And then you sit down and you write out 20 answers to the question. You force yourself to sit there until you come up with 20 answers, one after another. Now, the first few answers will come easily. The second few answers will become more difficult. But take the logical answer and then take the opposite of the logical answer. One could be get up early in the morning and get going earlier. The other could be get up later in the morning and get going later. Write the opposite and see what it looks like. Another could be a synthesis of the two. Get up earlier in the morning and prepare, and maybe start a little bit later, but have every single call prepared for and by confirmed appointment. In other words, how much more successful do you think you're going to be if you're generating hundreds of ideas a year and you're implementing one new idea a day to increase your income and your effectiveness? I guarantee you that this idea will just blow you away. As a matter of fact, by the second or third day that you've been generating ideas like this, you will have so many ideas and so many new ways to develop more business, you will not have enough time in the day to do it. I promise you that you try it for 3 days, you will be staggered at the quality of the ideas that come out of your mind. You just will not believe it. You cannot believe that you wrote that down. It's such an excellent idea. And all you need is one good idea that's a little bit newer. Marshall McLuhan once said that all you need is an idea that's 10% new to make $1 million. That's all it has to be, is 10% new. It doesn't have to be a major breakthrough. All of the great money-making ideas of today are not brand new products or services. They are merely marginal improvements on existing products that open up whole brand new markets. Isn't that true? And if you use this idea and use this regularly and develop 20 ideas a day, you will be astonished. You will become one of the most creative salespeople and, by extension, one of the most highly paid salespeople in your profession. And once you develop this knack of creativity and analysis, there is nowhere that you can't go, and there's no product that you can't sell successfully as long as you believe in it.